Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The Morning Show. The Home Team. No, it's both. It's The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame.
Crossover, step back! That's
awesome. Right here on 960theref.com.
What is up, guys? Sam Franco, Chris Brame back with another edition of The Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Plenty to get to today. We're going to kind of split this episode in half. We're going to talk about the Braves, the moves they made going into and out of the trade deadline. Still have a waiver trade deadline, so technically teams can still make moves, but we'll talk about that. But first and foremost, we're going to dive in as Georgia. We're recording this on Thursday, so when we publish it, it will be the day, Friday, the Georgia begins fall camp, fall practices. Kirby Smart will have a press conference. So we're getting ready. It is happening. Fan day coming up on Saturday. I know you and Dave will be over at the UGA bookstore, Brame. So, again, plenty to dive into with Georgia football and the start of the season coming up in, again, we're recording Thursday, 30 days from today, so 29 days from the day we publish this podcast.
Yeah, and I think we've all been, extra antsy to get this season started and, what this team has as an encore to last season, which was really, I mean, for me, the most fun I've had watching Georgia football. And, big things are still expected of this team, despite the heavy losses that Georgia had to the NFL, and seeing how if this team can get as deep as last year's team did, or what it has in store. But there's still a lot of Kirby even said it. There's going to be some epic position battles as fall camp begins, and you think about probably a couple spots at cornerback up for grabs. I mean, there's just a lot of good players on that offensive line. How's that two deep going to shake out? And also, Fields was here for spring practice, but, what kind of progress has he made, and how much will we see him this fall?
Yeah, and that's the thing. This stadium's definitely going to look, different. Speaking of progress, the progress on the West End Zone project as well. We've seen some sort of, pictures and things like that, but I'm sure they'll let the media tour through there once they're completely finished. And from the pictures I've seen of the locker room, I've been in the Falcons locker room at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. The Georgia one's better. You just look at how awesome they did with the upgrades there, that whole recruit deck and everything that's going to be available to the recruits. And look, Georgia's already just murdering the recruiting trail right now as it is without that. So if that's going to enhance things even more, I can't even imagine how good things could get around here.
Well, it sounds like it already paid off, because Georgia had an unveiling last weekend, and then the next day got three verbal commitments. And, there are some who believe Georgia's actually got a couple other commitments that came out of that right now are the silent variety.
Soft commits.
Yeah, but possibly a half dozen guys committed, and, Georgia gets another elite running back, gets one of the top 10 players from the state of Florida, and then lands, and we'll see where Micaiah Tung ends up playing, whether he gets slotted as a receiver here. Maybe they try and look at him somewhere on defense once he's here, but man, that's a guy they pulled up. He goes to high school basically right on LSU's campus.
That's incredible that Georgia's been able to do that.
Yeah, so you get those three guys just from the weekend when they had the unveiling of that new end zone project, and that's what it's all about. It's about recruiting, and I'm telling you, I think Kirby, he dots every I and crosses every T. He is meticulous when it comes to preparing and hosting these recruits and these visits, and it's big time paying off, because it feels like any player Georgia wants out there in recruiting, Georgia is getting.
Exactly, and it's just crazy. In fact, one of my moles in Athens said that they were in one of the local electronics stores the other day and saw some UGA staffers walking out with a bunch of PS4s and Xboxes and things like that. So just stocking up that recruiting lounge or whatever that's over there. I don't think it has a slide into a ball pit or whatever like the one at Clemson does. But
they have laser tag there.
They
do have
laser tag, yeah, because Quasar is doing so well nowadays in the world of entertainment, I guess. People are lining up to go to Quasar left and right.
Well, I just finished rewatching Breaking Bad for like the sixth time, and you remember that that broken down laser tag place is where Saul Goodman, he wanted Walter White to buy that to help launder his money, right?
Instead of the car wash.
Yeah. That's where they were hiding out Jesse for a while, hiding him from Gus Fring. Your point about no one does laser tag anymore.
So, I don't know if that is the best thing. But look, Clemson realized it very early on and how proactive you need to be in recruiting and what you have to do to kind of lure the young minds of today to your program. And Kirby Smart seems to be doing very well, and his knowledge on that seems to be as high as about anyone's in the country. I mean, it's funny, and I didn't say, tease this in the beginning of the show, but I do want to get to Urban Meyer a little bit here. I also have some thoughts on some interesting things that Jim Harbaugh has had to say recently, or at least that a former quarterback of Jim Harbaugh's has said about him. But one thing you look at with kind of when Urban Meyer left Florida initially, there's the talk of, the chest pains and the wanting to spend more time with his family. But, kind of going under the surface here, Urban Meyer saw the writing on the wall. He was in 2008, his Florida team beat Alabama in the SEC championship game. The next year, the two teams played again and Alabama mopped the floor with them. So I think that one thing about that is Urban Meyer saw the writing on the wall. He saw the closet being emptied out at Florida, the recruiting classes that he had that weren't as good. Kind of he saw what was happening there. And so, he ends up not being the coach at Florida anymore and takes, so much time to spend with his family before deciding to go to Ohio State. That's kind of what I see here happening with Georgia. I think a lot of coaches, a lot of programs are kind of seeing the writing on the wall with what Georgia's doing. And, Nick Saban might not want to go head-to-head with Kirby Smart in the recruiting trail that much longer. He's not the youngest guy, so I'm not saying he's going to retire anytime soon, but, this could be a similar situation. Meyer saw Saban in Alabama and the juggernaut that was going to be, and now you look at what Georgia's doing, and they could be kind of just like Alabama was back in 2008-2009.
Yeah, I mean, you've even got a young Dabo Swinney across the way at Clemson that's doing he's doing similar work on the recruiting front too now. I mean, I don't know, I don't think it has anything to do with Kirby. I never saw Saban as one of those lifer head coaches anyway, and he'll be, I guess, 67 or 68 later this year, but they do keep extending his contract, and I mean, the guy's getting paid like $8.5 million a year. He's got a couple of those longevity bonuses that'll kick in like 2021 and 22. So, I mean, his most recent contract extension was carried him through, 25 or 26, mm-hmm. I think. And I get it. I mean, for recruiting, because he is. I mean, that's been brought up that, coaches, I'm sure some of these other coaches are going around to recruits now and saying, hey, I mean,
he's not going to be around.
He ain't going to be around. So I know he's fighting that, and the school's got to keep extending his contract. So I get that that's not ironclad. I mean, he could still decide to walk away at any time, but I still sort of suspect that he will, but just because, more than anything, I mean, the guy has nothing left to accomplish. He is approaching 70 now, and he's got, already he's got more money than anyone could ever spend. So when is it, when's the time going to come to just kick back and kind of enjoy that and take baths in the lake?
I think he's opening up a Mercedes-Benz dealership in Nashville, if I'm not mistaken.
So he's not doing one in, Birmingham or wherever to compete with
Julio Jones Kia?
Yeah, no, he's not. So he's not doing that. Well, good for him.
Yeah.
Not going toe-to-toe with his former player.
Yeah, so, it's just funny to talk about Nick Saban and forecast the end of his career, but he seems to be a guy that right now doesn't look like he's slowing down, but at the same time, maybe Georgia becoming what we all think they're going to become here based on the recruiting classes, maybe that speeds up the exit a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, if at the point where, you know, maybe there is where Georgia nudges ahead of Alabama, and if he's not, you know, if success isn't coming as easy as it was for him, and maybe he will just get to the point where he's at a certain age where he realizes that, like, yeah, I mean, maybe I just don't have it in me like I once did, and it'll accelerate it one way or another. But I don't know. I just, you know, he's so much younger looking than, you know, other coaches. I mean, like, to me, like Joe Paterno, I guess when you go back and look at him when he was in the, you know, coaching in the 70s or the 80s, and I mean, how old would he have been then? Like in his 40s?
Yeah.
I mean, he at that time he looked like he did at the very end to me. Like he looked like the old man from the movie Up. And
he does look like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and but like he's always looked like that. But that's like true. So, I mean, you think of. I mean, again, people brought this up before, but I mean, when Bear Bryant died, he was Nick Saban's age, and Bear Bryant looked like he was, you know, 90 years old.
Well, and it was very close to when he like retired too, right?
Yeah, it was like 3 months later.
And the same with Joe Paterno. You know, once he got ousted at Penn State.
Yeah, he
only,
died
it was
like
only a matter of time.
It was months.
So,
yeah,
well, you know, we're not saying that's what's going to happen to Nick Saban or anything, but it is interesting how that sort of correlates there. But you know, this is just a situation where, like you said, other coaches are using this, even if it is, you know, fake news or whatever, that Nick Saban may be leaving soon. But certainly an interesting thing to pay attention to. Another thing that's been interesting to pay attention to is the offseason in the Big Ten. And the two biggest schools in the Big Ten, I do not include Penn State in this, as big as they are. They're not Michigan. They're not Ohio State. And what's happening right now at Ohio State with Urban Meyer, and look, this is a fluid situation, so us talking about this right now, by the time this podcast is published, it might sound like old news. But at least from this perspective, I said this on the morning show earlier, and I'll reiterate it here. Urban Meyer's an enabler. I mean, if you look at his track record over his career, you look at Chris Rainey, what happened there. This is a guy who told his girlfriend, time to die, bleep, and nothing really came of that. There were warning signs with Aaron Hernandez. Aaron Hernandez had gang involvement in high school, so the writing was there on the wall. But Urban Meyer didn't care because he wanted to run a football program that won games. Carlos Hyde had something happen kind of similar to all this stuff. I'm not exactly sure on the situation there, but it was something that involved some sort of domestic violence issue. So there was, again, a history there. And now we're hearing this thing about the wife of a former staffer. The staffer just got fired. And all this stuff's coming out, and great reporting by Brett McMurphy. But if you're asking me if I'm surprised by this in any way, shape, or form, sadly, the answer is no.
Well, no, because we had a massive scandal at Penn State, and we still after that had a massive scandal at Baylor. Then we've had what's gone on at Michigan State go on. So, yeah, I mean, it's just these. You know, these schools are desperate to protect their images, and they think that they can, you know, sweep stuff under the rug for a long time.
Well, I don't think it's just protecting their images. It's about winning.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's that. Games. And, yeah, I mean, the reputations, and they've got a winning coach in place, and they don't want to wreck that, because it's about winning, and then it's about the money that follows with the follows along with the winning. But
interesting how three of those schools that you mentioned, Penn State, Michigan State, Ohio State, what do they all have in common?
I mean, yeah. I mean, they're all in the Big
they're
10.
All in the Big Ten.
But even prior to Blimbitz, essentially the guy, and I know Luke Fickell was there for a year, but essentially the guy that Urban Meyer replaced had to resign in scandal, too. Now,
right.
His scandal was he was lying about tattoos that his players were receiving.
I was going to say, this is like comparing Stone Mountain to a pebble. Like,
yeah,
I mean, they're completely different.
Yeah, but it's ultimately what's bringing Urban Meyer down is not the fact that he continued to employ a serial domestic abuser, allegedly. It's the fact that he lied about it at Big Ten Media Days just a couple of weeks ago.
And
yeah.
And I nothing's happened yet, but I would be floored if he is their coach next year. I just don't think, or coming up this season, I just don't think you can keep him at this point. The he is already lost in the court of public perception.
No, and I mean the I don't think you come back from paid administrative leave.
No,
that's just no. At this point now, I guess both parties are
their ducks in a row.
Yeah, that's just trying to figure out. All right, well, how much money are we going to owe you with the
but
remainder of your contract?
Anything if the Title IX investigation and everything proves that, you know, he knowingly you know, covered this up or whatever.
Right. And I know. I mean, that, and I guess that's what legal teams are sorting out, which
although
is why he's
Ohio
on the paid administrative
ahead,
leave.
Yeah, you may just go ahead and say, hey, take this money and get out of here. You know what I mean? That might just be easier for them to go ahead and do. But it's a bad situation, and it really shows. And I'm not saying this wouldn't happen at SEC schools. I'm not saying it wouldn't happen really anywhere.
No, it could happen anywhere,
it
Sam.
It really just shows a cultural problem we have, not just in college football, in sports in general, where winning and putting forth a winning product becomes more important than people's safety and the safety of families and the just prioritizing of things incorrectly. Because at no point should winning a college football game or having a winning program take precedence over the safety of a woman who was scared to go home and scared of her husband.
No, but it's happening, and it'll happen again. Because I mean, we as fans put a pretty high premium on winning. And when you get a good coach in there, you want to keep them in there. And then that coach is making just millions and millions and millions of dollars and gobs of money. And that's a salary they don't want to relinquish either. And, you know, when you look back on it in hindsight, if Urban Meyer just stepped up and not let the problem, you know, and dealt with this, then he'd be fine. But, you know, they don't view it that way. They feel like, well, no one will know. No one will find out. We can keep this under wraps. This is Earl Bruce's grandson. I don't want to fire him. And you know, and he hung on since 09, because that's when the first allegation surfaced against him when he was an assistant coach at Florida. And I guess the ones we're dealing with now happened in 2015. But even since yesterday, now I think what the Cleveland Plain Dealer has dug up like 9 other police reports,
right,
of an incident between Zach and Courtney Smith. So not just 09, and not just like one incident in 09 and one in 2015.
And the screen grabs that Brett McMurphy posted, you know, on his Facebook page. I've talked about this on the morning show. I'll reiterate it here as well. Look, Urban Meyer and his wife Shelley, they share a bed. You know, this isn't 1950 in the Brady Bunch when you're going to sleep in 2 separate beds. But regardless, even if that wasn't the case, it's a marriage. You've got to be kidding me if you think Urban Meyer didn't know about this.
No one believes that.
Well, yeah, maybe jaded, blind Ohio State
fan
does.
Well, I mean, that's the spin that I guess some, you know, a lawyer or something will put on it is, well, there's no proof that Shelley did ever tell Urban about that, but there was another player's wife who does have a text exchange that suggests that Urban heard about the incident in 2015 and talked to Zach about it, and Zach denied everything, and Urban doesn't know what to think. So, I mean, that's the one where there's really the smoking gun.
Yeah, for sure.
But, you know, it's not just Shelley Meyer, too. It's that Earl Bruce, who was Zach Smith's grandfather, and then this, what Hiram DeFreeze is his name, who is described as Urban Meyer's life coach, went to Courtney Smith in 2009 after that first incident in Florida and urged her not to press charges against her husband because it would wreck his career. So, you know, there's 2 other people that are really close to Urban Meyer that would have known about this, and then you'd have to believe that, yes, Urban was the one guy, though, that was just never in the loop. Every other assistant coach's wife knew about it, but he didn't.
Yeah, just absurd. It's almost like the scene in the Joe Paterno movie on HBO where, you know, they're all sitting there, I guess, in the living room or they're sitting somewhere, and the family's members are trying to be like, hey, you know, this is serious or whatever. And he's just like, I just want to watch game film on Nebraska, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
You know,
so. Well, he's got the 2 sane children. And then the other one, Jay Paterno, is the crazy one who even now is like, you know, he has said that he hopes Ohio State doesn't bend to the mob mentality with Urban Meyer. And
yeah,
like,
because that's exactly what we wanted, was Jay Paterno's thoughts on the situation.
Yeah, I mean, if I was Urban Meyer, I'd be like, hey, Jay, I can handle this. Thank you.
But a little bit of a lighter note from the Big Ten I wanted to get to was former Michigan quarterback Wilton Spate, who transferred the school. Was he?
UCLA.
UCLA, that's right. Okay, so he transfers to UCLA, and he was, I guess, asked about Jim Harbaugh. And the revelation that came out from that was that Jim Harbaugh apparently tells his players not to eat chicken because it's a nervous bird.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Harbaugh's a weirdo.
He's nuts.
But you know, in light of what's happening in Columbus, Ohio, and what's happened in, you know, at Michigan State, like, Harbaugh's definitely an eccentric, and he is a weirdo. And, but, you know, he doesn't seem like a bad guy. Like, Urban Meyer always just kind of felt like he was just a bad dude.
No, but totally agree with you. I think that Jim Harbaugh, however, you know, crazy he is, I don't think this kind of thing would ever happen under his watch.
No, but the key with Harbaugh is just he's a weird guy, and I guess with him you get to a point of when does that axe start to wear thin on players and everyone around him? Like at first, you know, he shows up and he's new, and certainly in Michigan, it's exciting for him to be the head coach because he's really good.
Yeah.
He did great at Stanford. He got the 49ers to the Super Bowl, and he's also a Michigan alum. But at some point, I think that stuff probably just starts to get old.
You got to win. I mean, that's the bottom line. I mean, he's got to win. And, you know, just in terms of some of the goofier things, you know, there's this thing now about not wanting to eat chicken because it's a nervous bird. There's also the four pillars of Jim Harbaugh's life that he came out with a few years ago, where it's like, if you get good sleep, you eat steak, you drink milk, and you drink water, you're going to be fine. And it's like, well, doctors have said you probably shouldn't eat red meat every day and that chicken is a very good protein-heavy alternative. But, yeah, you shouldn't eat chickens because they're a nervous bird.
No. I mean, I pointed out the reason chickens might be nervous birds is because when they're born, their beaks and their toes are shaved. Then they're injected with hormones that enlarge their breasts to the point that their legs can no longer support them. And the lucky ones die of heart failure. And then the unlucky ones will spend the rest of their lives sitting in their own feces until they become your dinner.
Now you're making me hungry, man.
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't want to spoil your supper. But if chickens appear nervous, you know, consider their lives.
This is a local greatest hits, if you will. But have you ever seen that chicken jail driving around here?
No.
Okay, so in the morning, like really early in the morning when I go into work, sometimes I'll see it in the afternoon. It's this giant tractor trailer. And you can see, like, there's no big, like, thing blocking you. It's just, like, hundreds, maybe like a thousand. It's like chicken cages. And you can see the chickens.
Well, yeah. I mean, I've seen those trucks before.
Saying. Yeah. The chicken jail. That's what it's called. That's what I call it. Because that's what it looks like. It looks like there's a bunch of chickens in jail on the back of a truck.
Yeah, I mean, they're all crammed into
that's
these little
I'm
crates.
Yeah,
and there's
thing.
Right, there's more than one of them in the crate.
Oh, yeah.
And they're, so yeah, I mean, what, would you be nervous?
And they're just transporting it to the slaughterhouse, basically.
Exactly.
But like, yeah, that's like hundreds of chickens on the back of a semi-truck. And every time I see it, like, the worst part is if you get behind it because it stinks. But like then you see it and it's just like, man, I'm going to eat that for dinner.
Well, and the worst is when you have to stop at a light next to it and you see all those birds are all staring
They're
at
staring
you.
Right back at you.
I can't look at it. But yeah, so anyway, for, you know, it's a nervous bird. Well, I want to tell you why a chicken might be nervous.
Yeah, we need to get Jim Harbaugh on the line. We'll get him on the podcast and explain to him why chickens are nervous.
Let me tell you, here's how their life goes. They're born, then they're thrown in these sorters. And if they survive that, then their toes and their beaks are shaved off, and then all that other stuff.
All right, Upton Sinclair, settle down over here. But no, that's the thing, too. It's like, okay, if you're going to make that sort of leap, how about this leap? Cows are slow. They have very little reaction time. They're not agile at all, and they're dumb. So it's better to eat that than it is to eat a chicken who might be nervous.
I mean, cows just hang out in fields all day and eat grass, and that's it. Yeah.
Yeah. They're super slow. They're not smart.
Yeah.
I mean, there's so
many. I thought they were smart, though.
Cows?
Yes.
They are?
Yeah.
How are they smart?
They're smart. They're smarter than dogs.
Really?
Yeah.
I've heard pigs are smarter than
pigs
dogs.
Pigs are smart, too. Yeah.
Well,
we just, you know, you just don't want to think about how intelligent a cow is because, you know, it might ruin your dinner.
Because they're tasty.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
I just want to think of that as a big, dumb animal.
You got that right. No question about it. But look, it's just funny to talk about Jim Harbaugh, but it's not going to be funny to Michigan fans if they don't start to win. And that's the bottom line. He's won. What was it? That guy from SpartanWire.com at Big Ten Media Days just slaughtered him with that question. Although, I mean, granted, he was a Michigan State guy, so of course he's going to do that. But talking about how he's, what, 1-5 against Michigan State and Ohio State in his tenure at Michigan so far. And that's the thing. that, like you said, the character Jim Harbaugh is going to get old if he doesn't start to win.
Well, it, you know, at least right now the prospects for the Ohio State game look a little bit better, even though the game is in Columbus this year. He might have to try and outwit Ryan Day instead of Urban Meyer. Now, the Michigan State game for them this fall is going to be tough because they've got to go to Lansing the week after they host Wisconsin. And Big Ten teams generally do not fare well the week after they play Wisconsin because Wisconsin is just one of those big, tough, physical teams that just, even if you beat them, you've been beaten up playing them for 60 minutes. So, you know, they've got a, it's a tough spot on the schedule for Michigan State. But the Notre Dame game is huge too because even though they don't play the Irish every year anymore, that is, you know, that's their third biggest rival, along with Michigan State and Ohio State. So, you know, for the knock on him not being able to beat his rivals, it'd be tough on him if he started 0-1 with a loss to Notre Dame.
All right, we'll wrap up the podcast today with a quick rundown of kind of what the Braves did at the trade deadline. I was kind of underwhelmed by it. I mean, they bring in Kevin Gausman, a starting pitcher from the Baltimore Orioles, a pitcher who, you know, I think he's just being brought in to add a little bit of depth to the rotation this season. But this is a rotation, you know, going into next year that there's going to be a lot of guys competing for five spots.
Well, right now there's only two guys. Well, now there's three, but they're prior to the trade, there were two guys in the rotation right now that are guaranteed to be in next year's rotation, Newcomb and Foltynewicz.
And I'd say Soroka had gotten into the rotation before he got hurt.
Yeah.
So he's not in it right now, but I'd put a lot of money on him being in the rotation as well. So I would probably say three of the spots, like you said, you know, with Newcomb and Folty, and I'll throw Soroka in there as three. So really, I think you're competing for two spots.
Well, now I think Gausman is going to be one of the guys too.
So you think he's going to be in there? Well,
yeah. I mean, he's still one of those guys where his contract is good because he's got 2 years of, you know, under team control. He's not eligible to hit free agency until I think 2021.
Yeah, and look, he's a guy. This season, his ERA 4.43. His career ERA in six seasons is 4.22. Sometimes you have to look beyond that, though, because he's been on a Baltimore team that hasn't been very good. His most wins in a season is 11. That was last season. He went 11-12 with 34 starts. But he's a guy who, you know, he's strikes out a good amount of batters. He had 179 last season. He had 71 walks. That walk number a little high. But overall, I think, you know, that's just another depth piece there. Not a guy that's going to blow you away, but certainly a middle of the rotation guy. And then the other acquisition, the big one, I know that they brought in Johnny Venters, but that was a few weeks ago. Now they have Adam Duvall, who they trade Lucas Sims, Matt Whistler, and Preston Tucker for. And on the surface, I thought they might have given up a bit much for a guy who's batting 205 and has 15 home runs. But when you're just bringing this guy into platoon, basically, with Ender Inciarte, you know, right-handed pitching versus left-handed pitching, and when Duvall's in the lineup, you shift Ronald Acuna over center field. But overall, I mean, I think the Braves were content not with standing pat, but with not doing too much, because this season is kind of house money at this point, because they know next season's the one where they really want to make that run.
Yeah, and they ended up not giving away any like elite prospects for either of these trades. Duvall's a guy that does have power, even though his, you know, the rest of his slash line is pretty pitiful, but he's got 15 home runs, which it would right now is the third most on the Braves, behind only Albies and Freddie. So, you know, there's the potential to get some pop there from him. And yeah, I did, and the key with him playing in Cincinnati is, all right, well, what were his home road splits? And he's hit as many home runs. I think there's difference for his career home runs. I think he's actually got more on the road. He's got like three more on the road than he had hit at home, so that's encouraging. But you know, he's sitting on 15 this year, coming off back-to-back 30 plus homer seasons. And you know, and given what they gave up, Sims, Whistler, and Tucker, so I mean, really with the Sims and Whistler, I think
the Braves had were ready to move on from them. Whistler in particular had been given plenty of opportunities, never really lived up to it. I still say they may have given up on Sims a little early. But he's a left-handed pitcher, and you know what the Braves have in abundance in the farm system? left-handed
pitcher. I mean, he had had opportunities, and I guess you just realize, like, you know, that they weren't surrendering too much at this at this point. But I know they got rained out the other night, but it was funny because the lineup was still, because NCR, they immediately went 4 for 5, right?
Yeah. Hey, man, maybe that lit a fire under him. Yeah. That's a good thing.
Well, so, I mean, I guess they were due to face a righty anyway in that last game against the Marlins, so the lineup was still the same with NCR in there. So I don't know when we'll even see Duvall.
Yeah.
I mean, he's going to – I guess it'll be against a lefty.
Yeah, and that'll flip the lineup around certainly. But one thing that's kind of weird with the Braves is, you know, in terms of acquiring guys, you expect a guy like Nick Markakis, for example, is like, okay, he's going to level out eventually. He hasn't. He's continued to stay consistent, I think, batting 319-ish right now. So that's something that you didn't really see happening, and that's why the guy's an all-star, and – the Braves may want to think of signing him back. I know that there's going to be a big sweepstakes for Bryce Harper, and a lot of Braves fans are hopeful that they at least throw their hat in the ring for him. But if that isn't the case, maybe you sign Markakis to a shorter-term deal. You know, he's definitely up there in age. But the way that he's played this season, I mean, maybe you want to bring him back, and maybe you make a run at more of an everyday third baseman, although they're trying to tell you Johan Camargo is that. But I don't think people see that long-term. So maybe you make a run at a third baseman as opposed to an outfielder, which is what a lot of people thought they were going to do in the offseason.
Well, I guess the team hopes Austin Riley is the future at third base.
Or maybe you make a run at a shortstop and get rid of Dansby Swanson. Because, you know, as good as he's been with the glove, which is definitely something to think about, the bat at times just doesn't seem to be there, and I know that they put a lot into marketing him, but maybe he's a guy that isn't untouchable anymore.
Well, like, the thing is he's no Andrelton Simmons, and the team gave up on Andrelton Simmons thinking that basically he had, you know, leveled out as a hitter and he was going to be what he was as a batter.
Right now, Dansby is Andrelton Simmons with a worse glove. I mean, that's essentially what he's getting.
Exactly. So if they were, you know, if they gave up on Andrelton Simmons, then I could see them just, you know, shipping Swanson someplace.
Yeah, and then maybe you bring in another shortstop. There's certainly options to be had, but yeah, Austin Riley does seem to be the third baseman of the future. So we'll see what ends up happening with the Braves. You know, like I mentioned earlier, there is still the the waiver trade deadline, and maybe they bring in a little stopgap measure. I know Adrian Beltre is a name that's been tossed around a little bit. Would he be interested in coming to Atlanta and helping them make a push at the postseason and possibly more? Who knows? But I think for right now, I'm not, you know, ecstatic about what the team did at the trade deadline, but I'm also not, you know, mad. You know, it's just one of those things where I'm like, I can see why they did what they did in terms of not wanting to give up too many pieces.
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, though, I don't think the – you know, I think Gausman does add a measure of, A, he can eat innings, and B, you know, he'll give you a chance to win when he starts. But, you know, I mean, what the team is lacking, when you start thinking about the postseason and you just got, do you have like this one guy that you would 100% trust you need a win to go out there and get it for you? No. And the bullpen, I mean, Venters is a great story, but the guys had 3 Tommy Johns, hadn't pitched a lot this season, and then they also got that guy, what's his name, Brad Brock?
Yeah, yeah.
And added him, too. So, I don't know. To me, the bullpen is really still just a big hot mess.
And I think that's what ultimately is going to be the Achilles heel for this team and sort of the death nail that causes them not to be that contending team this season, because there are teams around them that just have more in that department. All right, he's Chris Brame. I'm Sam Franco. No podcast next week because I will be on vacation. So we will return in 2 weeks with plenty to talk about. I assume we'll be talking about an interim head coach at Ohio State. I assume that we'll be talking plenty more college football as we get closer and closer to kickoff. And we'll probably talk some NFL, as we didn't do that this week, but the Falcons will have played their first preseason game by then. They're taking on the Jets on August 10th at MetLife Stadium. So there will be plenty of good stuff to talk about. And hey, no Falcons holdouts, which is nice.
Nope, Julio is signed and ready to go.
Hopefully we're not talking about Roquan Smith still holding out. And that is just one thing. I don't want to dive into it too much. But just, I guess, final thoughts on this edition of the Crossover. He would be dumb to sign a contract that eliminates all of his guaranteed money based on him breaking a rule in a game that we still have no idea how it's going to be enforced.
No, where, I mean, he would be, if he broke the rule, it would be because he was attempting to make a tackle, you know, doing it in service of the team, what he's getting, you know, essentially paid to do. Yeah, the Bears are not looking good here, and I'm sure
asinine that they would put that sort of clause in the contract where, oh, if you break this rule that we've never even seen put into place before, then we're going to take all your guaranteed money. Yeah, Roquan Smith would be an idiot to sign that contract.
Yeah,
so good for him for holding out.
He still has that newspaper columnist that's after him, too. That guy.
That guy's an idiot.
I mean, his lead in his column he wrote the other day was like, first he lost his iPad, now he's lost his way to the practice field.
Oh,
and it's like,
God.
Hey, hold on, buddy. He didn't lose his iPad. It was stolen.
Yeah, and also provide some context that the team is trying to basically screw him out of, like, all of his guaranteed money.
Yeah, I saw, you know, the Browns released Trenton Thompson, which is too bad for Trent, but at this point, Roquan's probably thinking, I wish the Bears would release me.
I know, because this whole thing is asinine. But we'll hopefully not be talking about Roquan still holding out by the next time we record a podcast. So, Brame, I will see you again in 2 weeks. This has been another edition of the Crossover Podcast right here on 960theref.com. Back in a few weeks. Talk to y'all then.
You've been listening to The Crossover with Sam Franco and Chris Brame on 960theref.com.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.